Good morning. And we have a case of Shanklin versus Commonwealth. Would you care to reserve any time for rebuttal?
4 minutes, Your Honor.
Okay. You may begin whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, my name is Mason Husby. I represent the appellant, Nathan Shanklin. Before the court is one issue. The trial court took the Fourth Amendment right of Mr. Shanklin sua sponte, in the absence of agreement, absence of a request, and did so in violation of the statute.
Tell us how it's preserved in this case.
I was not the trial attorney, and I don't believe that a contemporaneous objection was made. It's not in the record, so I don't believe it's preserved under that. I would be asking for it to be considered under the ends of justice.
Okay, and if you could explain to us how it gets there.
Your Honor, what you have is, you have an error. You have two cases that are on point. You have Murray and you have Anderson. The big difference between Anderson and Murray is Anderson says you can take someone's Fourth Amendment if they agree to it as part of a waiver because there's some sort of benefit that's given as part of a plea agreement. But you can't just take it because you want to, especially when it's prospective. So when you say the ends of justice, one, we have a constitutional issue and a constitutional violation that is, and even though he didn't object at the time, he's objecting now.
But you know that the constitutional issue, you can waive a constitutional issue.
You can waive your objection to it at the time, but he hasn't had the injury yet. He doesn't have the injury until he starts probation. He has a limited Fourth Amendment right. He has more of a Fourth Amendment right in prison than he will coming out.
Well, let's go back to the basis for 5A18. Let's go back to that and look at that. So, from a standpoint of this case, there's two things relating to 5A18. One is the ability of the trial court to correct, and the other is for opposing counsel to be able to address the error squarely and make their arguments. If this had been raised at trial, the trial court could have done one of several things, which would have either given your client total relief or crafted it in a different way, correct?
I would agree with that.
Okay, so isn't this exactly why 5A18 exists? And if we were to apply ends of justice here, wouldn't the exception swallow the rule?
Your Honor, I think it's an argument to be made that because it wasn't objected to, that you can't just have winning arguments come up on procedural default. Now, I've read the Commonwealth's brief, and as they cited case law, and I'll admit that that's a big hurdle that Mr. Shanklin needs to get over. But the two factors that we look at is whether there's an error. I think there's a clear error, and then whether the failure to apply the ends of justice would result in a grave injustice. When you have a deprivation of someone's Fourth Amendment rights without justification, I think that is a grave injustice. The justification is not—it's not asked for by the Commonwealth. So even if we—if it was raised and the judge said, "Oh wait, I'm sorry, no one asked for this," I mean, there's other possibilities, but as the Commonwealth or as the AG's office brought up in their brief, that there were other avenues that you could get there. So I could have filed, as his appellate counsel, I could have withdrawn the appeal, filed a 306, or have him reconsider and remove that. And then if he didn't, I'd be back. He's back up here, but now it's preserved. So we come back to the same point, Your Honor. It's just whether I go through 306 and ask for a motion to reconsider, and the judge says no. I said what I meant, then we're back in front of you all asking Murray and Anderson and what applies. Apparently this needs direction. I think it's clear that...
But the difference in all that is that the judge at least has a chance to address it.
That's correct. But when you have when you have a constitutional violation and the error is clear...
We haven't even talked about whether the error is clear or not, but let's assume it's clear. Go ahead.
Do we go through the steps, and I understand that the Court of Appeals wants that we need to preserve some sort of procedural default. I get the point before 5A18, but when you're just going to end up back here, it seems that it makes more sense to solve the issue now than to dismiss it for failure to sustain the objection, or for failure to make the objection, and then go through a 306 motion, the judge say, no, I meant what I said, and then be back up here. I think there needs to be direction. The case.
But we don't really know what the trial judge would say, because it's really a little bit unclear. I mean, he never had an opportunity to even think about it.
Well, clearly he had some opportunity to think about it. He took it.
But he didn't have an opportunity to confront an objection about it. That's the difference.
Well, when you know that you can't take someone's fourth, when the case law is clear as it is.
Now, counsel, this is a very different case from Murray. So,
okay.
I mean, if you want to talk about that, let's talk about that. In this instance, you have, he's right on the heels of his probation, and he's committing crime in a drug house. Drugs are involved. You've got, it's not an indefinite, it's a 10-year issue as opposed to Murray. So I think there are distinguishing features here from Murray.
I think there's distinguishing features, but then when you look at the case law and you look at what, especially when you look at Anderson, you look at the concurrence in Anderson, which was written by Justice Kintzer, who ended up doing
writing
the opinion
Murray.
In Murray. And Kintzer's whole argument in the concurrence is it's an agreement. You can do it through an agreement, but you can't do it otherwise. And then she writes the final opinion. I agree that she leaves some window open to say that there, because reasonableness is an evolving standard and there might be something in there. But when you have somebody in Murray where you have the Commonwealth, I think, in Murray has the biggest interest in making sure that he doesn't reoffend. You have continued sexual contact and rapes from a 5-year-old, from someone who was 5 to 13. You have engaging in grooming behavior. If there's anyone we want a Fourth Amendment waiver on that's going to be on, it's Murray. And the Supreme Court said, no, it's not part of an agreement, and pointed back to Anderson. So when you have that dichotomy, I think the fact that he was on the heels of his probation and you have those things, if the Commonwealth had the concerns that they had, they could have entered into a plea agreement that both parties benefited from, and they got their Fourth Amendment waiver as part of that. If that was their concern about reoffending. They didn't ask for that, and because of that, that's why some people go to trial based off of these things, because they want to preserve their rights, especially in the jurisdiction I work in where it's the standard part of the plea agreement. So with that, Your Honor, I submit that there is, the issue wasn't preserved at trial. I would ask for the court to consider it under the ends of justice, and I think the error is clear.
Let me ask you one more question. I wouldn't do this except you're a really good advocate, and you, I think, can handle this. So let me ask you this question. So ends of justice exception.
Yes, Your Honor.
There's a series of cases that talk about ends of justice exception when it deals with the conviction, and then there's other cases that talk about it in the sentencing context and then the post-sentencing context. Is there a difference in the analysis as to what is a grave injustice when you're talking conviction versus when you're talking
I do think that there is a difference, because I think we're not asking for a new trial. We're not asking for things to change. And I think that's that the guilt or innocence and the detriment of going through all of those steps again and asking for a new trial, when it's not the guilt or innocence, it's whether or not something should be included in the sentencing language. So I think there, not that the standard is lessened, but I think that's a factor that can be taken into account when you look at all of the issues of what is the effect of granting the relief sought. And when you look at it's essentially just asking for a new sentencing at most, and at minimum, striking the language.
But doesn't that affect your grave injustice argument?
In terms of whether it affects
whether
a grave injustice.
Whether it rises to a grave injustice.
I don't think whether it or not it involves a grave injustice. I mean, it's still dealing with a constitutional right and the deprivation thereof. But when you have, but just because the remedy is not substantial in terms of what needs to happen, in terms of we're not having a new trial, we're just having a new sentencing hearing, we're not taking up additional time in terms of judicial efficiency, I don't think that plays into whether or not it's a grave injustice. I think that's a separate question. I think it those are a factor that you can consider in terms of the 5A18.
Thank you. Ms. Darrett?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Leah Darren for the Commonwealth this morning. Opposing counsel, Mr. Mason, has done a nice job arguing the 5A18 claim, but it is our position that 5A18 controls here and that the claim was not raised at any time in any fashion in the trial court. Because it was not raised, the court was not given an opportunity to correct. The Commonwealth was deprived of the opportunity to make any argument and perhaps fashion some sort of argument that could address the issue. And then finally, under the circumstances of this case, where this defendant sat in court and heard the judge say, and as a condition of your sentence suspension, and P.S., he gets 43 years, all suspended except the 10 mandatory. So he sat there, he listened to the court, he said nothing. At the very least, if this issue had been raised, maybe we don't have a plea agreement here, but perhaps this defendant really wanted the benefit of that sentence suspension, so he only had to pull the mandatory 10. So for all of these reasons, 5A18, and the case law is clear, constitutional claims are waived.
How about the grave injustice?
Valid
claims
are
waived. Talk to us about grave injustice.
Well, the grave injustice cases are cases where the defendant was convicted of a crime that didn't exist, or the defendant was convicted of a crime that he could not have committed. The defendant was convicted of a crime and an element of the offense was not proved. Or the defendant, or there's an attack on a jury instruction. None of the cases where grave injustice has been addressed have to do with the situation that we have at hand here. And that is a distant cousin from those kinds of cases. This is a case where the claim has to do with sentencing.
So how do we look at the ends of justice exception in this context?
I don't believe his claim comes close to meeting the grave injustice that has to be proved in order for 5A18 to be overcome and his claim to be addressed. This court in Winslow and Vey have talked about just having a winning argument is not enough, because if having a winning argument would prevail, it would swallow the rule. So this is not a case where the ends of justice exception should be applied. And then finally, this is not a case where the ends of justice should apply, because, as I've argued, it's a sentencing issue. And number two, as other counsel has argued in support of his claim, 19.2.304 states that the court can always come back and modify the terms of a sentence suspension. So if he has a remedy at hand, again, there would be no reason for the court to apply 5A18. And on the merits of this case, this is, a sophisticated drug distribution operation. This defendant, he was convicted of several offenses, including at least his third distribution offense, and he gets the mandatory 10 on that. And this is a classic case where courts across the country have balanced this kind of drug case, have balanced the Fourth Amendment waiver with the benefit to the community, and have found, and we've cited cases in our brief, have found where the Fourth Amendment, the waiver is appropriate in a case such as this. So, again, we've cited cases in the brief. I acknowledge that Murray talks about how that Fourth Amendment waiver comes in the context of a guilty plea. I think
but the standard is reasonableness, right?
Excuse me?
The standard is reasonableness.
Absolutely. The standard is reasonableness.
And you look at the Fourth Amendment piece in the concept of reasonableness. Isn't that what Murray says?
Yes. There's language to that effect, but we still have this context of a guilty plea where the defendant is agreeing to something. And I think that and that there's a colloquy of what the defendant is waiving. And I just I think the kind of colloquy that the judge did in this case preserves that same, if there's any question, the defendant can ask it. If the defendant objects, the judge can take that into consideration. And as Judge Mims says, he's not entitled to the suspension of any of his time. So the judge could impose, in this case, if he had objected, the judge could have imposed the full 43 years or something more than the 10. But, you know, bouncing back around, I think
So that may have been a reason he stayed silent.
Absolutely. I think that's our position. Does the court have any questions? We ask that the court affirm the conviction on the 5A18 waiver. If the court is addressing the merits, I think we're strong on merits. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Husby.
Thank you. Just a few closing pieces. One comment was, in terms of sentencing, you can appeal a sentence for an impermissible sentence. And I'm not saying that this is necessarily an impermissible sentence, but when you look at Murray and Anderson, but it is pretty close when you look at Murray, that this is, when it's not part of a plea agreement, this is something that's there. So that's, I think, and...
Let me ask you this. In this instance, it was a limited time period, correct?
Correct.
And it was on the heels of a very different set of circumstances than the circumstances in Murray. And I get that you're saying Murray was more severe than here, but they are different circumstances in terms of...
Versus a lifetime waiver versus, 10 years.
And he was on probation when he committed the offenses and...
Correct.
There's some distinguishing factors.
There's potential distinguishing factors, but again, I wouldn't argue that in terms. But getting to that point, there, the fact that it's a drug case, as brought up by the Commonwealth. I mean, the Murray doesn't focuses tangentially on the fact that maybe in a drug case this would be different, but the big thing that we're going to talk about here is that it's part of an agreement. So I don't think it necessarily... Are there distinguishing factors? Yes, but not necessarily... But those distinguishing factors aren't paramount and aren't what were the main differences between the results in Anderson and Murray, and those are our guiding posts. In terms of And the other piece was that the Commonwealth had mentioned the egregiousness of this, but if I believe Judge Decker was here when I argued the other piece, that the court during both pronouncing sentence and at trial both said that this had all the hallmarks of accommodation. So this wasn't necessarily this sophisticated drug interaction. When you look at the facts of the case, he's a user. He's sitting on the couch. Somebody wants to buy heroin. Someone else has heroin, and he walks up and helps cut off some of it, but isn't part of the, doesn't receive cash, and somebody else receives cash. And I get the whole principle in a second, and I'm not going to argue that thing. But it's not a sophisticated drug. He's not part of the sophisticated drug outfit. And so I think that needs to at least be acknowledged. But given this, I'm not saying it's preserved. I think that the detriment hasn't happened yet. But it is a grave injustice. And I think him getting another sentencing and the remedy that we're asking for is appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Consistent with the tradition of the court, we'll come down and greet counsel and then resume with smiling.